Welcome to Turn Extension, a supplemental podcast for the Advanced Maneuvers YouTube channel.
Hey everybody, Tony here from Advanced Maneuvers. So with us, right, we have Kevin as always. Kevin, how hey, you everybody. Doing? And then also we have Matt McWaters, right, Waters? Matt McWaters. It was like two T's, I think. It messed me up. I should have asked beforehand. But Matt McWaters, how you doing, man?
You know, I'm actually great. I'm really excited to be here. This is a thing that I never thought, you know, like I got into War Machine watching your guys' videos. So this is like, if anyone were like, hey, what is like the most pivotal moment in War Machine? I'd be like, probably when I watched like a Trolls video from Advanced Maneuvers. That's like what got me into the game.
Dude, that's pretty exciting. Even Trolls, man, that's a Kevin game right there.
Yeah, it's either me or a Cutthroat Cure.
That's true. Yeah. So we're really excited to get you on here, right? I know I've chatted with you a couple times throughout the last couple years. You know, we had talked a long time about, you know, if we were going to bring the channel back or whatnot. So we kind of did a little soft roll 2 weeks ago. And, you know, kind of what we were talking about, one of the people we were saying was like, hey, we really want to get a competitive view on it, right? And Matt, I think you've been really vocal with a lot of your stuff. Like, you're obviously a very competitive player. So I know probably everyone knows you. But why don't you give us a quick little rundown on, you know, a little bit about Matt.
Yeah, I'm the, if you ever at a con you hear someone yelling, it's probably me. I'm the loud, obnoxious one that is boisterous and fun, I guess. But on a more serious note, my name's Matt, and I'm a Canadian War Machine player. I live in Montreal, and I have been playing War Machine for 8 years, apparently, according to YouTube, because that is when I watched my first Advanced Maneuvers video. I don't know if there's really, I play every faction. I've won cons with every faction, and I don't really have, like, I guess my top two favorite models in the game are Vlad 2, because he has really dumb shoulders, and the Slaughterhouse, because it is the Evil Dead house and I love everything about it.
I mean, that was a really cool model that came out. I was surprised when they made it, and it looked pretty cool.
Yeah, like it's. Yeah, it's. I don't care about its rules. Whatever, that doesn't matter to me. I just love the fact that they put out a model that was just so weird and alien to everything else in the game, and it is beautiful. It is gorgeous.
It is. Yeah. So I play a lot of. This is not War Machine Horde related, but I play a lot of role playing games. And I'm part of a D&D group that does bounties, right? So kind of how it is, like, we get a bunch of people together, we play, someone randomly is a GM. So I was a GM once, and Slaughterhouse was in in one of the Monstronomicons. So I had to go roll it up, and it was one of the most intense fights ever. And it's so much fun to, one, see it on the table, but then getting, like, role-playing rules to play against it and just having people like fight it and get eaten by it and the goblins the gremlins, it's just I love that. So like seeing that model just gave me a new appreciation, especially seeing the RPG rules on it.
Yeah, I you know, it's funny too, because like we obviously I talk about the game a lot. I'm sure people have probably heard me on podcasts talking about the game, but one of my favorite things about War Machine and Hordes is like how outlandish some of the models are. Like you go to a table and you're like, what is that Blightbringer? It's just a giant mouth.
Yeah.
And it's like crazy. And then you see like the way people paint it and stuff and they're gorgeous or whatever. I bought a Blightbringer that was like beautifully painted from someone who was exiting the game. And it's like I was just like, this is the best purchase I've ever made on anything. It's like the most beautiful model. But anyways, I could talk about that forever.
No, it's good. It's good. So, all right, yeah, so I guess what we'll do is we'll get started, right? So kind of the main reason we wanted to bring you on, right, is I'm super excited for Mark IV, right? I am a 10 out of 10. Like, I've got my Storm Legion box already ordered. I'm begging, pleading Privateer Press to somehow send the starter box early because I really want to get those 50-point of models built. I just want to deal with them, right? Like, I want them so bad. So clearly I'm there, right? Kevin he's a 3 out of 10. You know, right, Kevin? Is that pretty accurate? Still 3 out of 10?
Yeah, 3 out of 10. I'm hedging towards a 4, but I need to see a faction that I'm going to actually be interested in.
Which is fair, yeah, right? So we are obviously on the more significantly more casual side, right? Where we haven't been playing for years. I'm super lucky. I have a local group that's like 5 minutes away. I've just been terrible and not been able to get out. Matt, you are a very competitive player, right? You made a big splash on the scene between Mark 3, Mark 2, all that stuff. So I kind of want to know, what are your thoughts on Mark 4 right now?
Overall, I would say I'm pretty excited, but I'm not a person who's worried about change. I have a group of people I talk to about all the War Machine stuff with regularly, like every day. And, you know, there's people in that group that are on both sides of the spectrum, right? They're like, what we have now is really good. And it's like, it's the best the game's ever been. And then like, there's people like me who are like, what does it matter? Like, this could be better or it could be worse. Like, it's going to be new and different and new things to learn. And that's like the purpose, right? Like, it doesn't matter if the game is the same or is different. It's enjoyable. And the Mark IV games I've played so far have been generally enjoyable. There's a few things where I'm like, okay, this definitely needs to be adjusted. Like, Repo needs to change, but that's, I can almost guarantee you it's coming. Mm-hmm. There's some other things that will almost certainly be changed. But outside of those, like, very few small things that are not like deal breakers for me, I'm like, yeah, this is going to be great. I'm very excited about the potential that cadres and armies open up for the way they could design a steamroller document. That's something that's very exciting to me. Like, one of the consistent competitive problems with War Machine Mark III has been your faction either has answers or it doesn't.
Yeah.
And like, even devolving or evolving that concept, like, your pairing either has answers or it doesn't. And one of the current issues in the current Mark III environment is we exist in a time where, like, Karchev II, Lilith IV, Baldwin, Sylvester Lucas, like, we have these outlier lists that are extremely powerful and ask very different questions from each other. And it's very challenging to build a pairing that can play into everything. Wormwood's another one of those things.
Yeah.
And cadres could, theoretically, give us an avenue to kind of have more flexible tools and bring better options to armies than our current two pairing system.
So I want to say it was probably middle of Mark II. Remember they had a format, right, where instead of you bringing a faction, you would bring two armies. And I think it was Keith Christensen won a tournament with Haley II and
Lich.
Asphyxius. Yeah, I think it was Lich too, right? Do you think something like that might come back for Steamroller? Do you think that's healthy even?
I don't think we're going to see something like that. I think Steamroller, I mean, so I have no information on this. This is me being like, I think Steamroller should be this way. Me putting on my armchair dev, I suppose. I think you could see a format that could be very interesting where you have a single army list. So let's say it's 100 points. Mm-hmm. And you can sideboard out 25 points, similar to how specialists used to work. And those 25 points could be a cadre, could be whatever, right? Like, okay. It could. So, like, imagine like a steamroller document where on one left side you have your standard list, and then on the right side you have your second caster,
mm-hmm.
and their like rack of spells. Then you have their battle group, and then you have like two cadres listed that you could choose between. And after you get paired, you could swap stuff in and out. So you like, you reveal what caster you're playing, and then you can swap stuff in and out, and then you play the game.
See, I'm looking at the fact of the way that they're introducing, you know, the concept, or at least how I'm perceiving the concept of an army. I'm going to use their terms, not theme. An army is three casters, jacks, and all that stuff. And could there be a situation where, I mean, this would be a complete diversion of the way lists are built now, but could there be a situation where you come to the table and you're playing Winter Corp, but you don't choose your caster or even the army that it is until you know who your opponent is, and then you kind of, for lack of terms, write the list right there?
I think that's possible. I have no information on that, but I think that it's much more likely that we'll see something in the same vein as what we've had. At least in the first iteration. Maybe future iterations they'll be more risky. But I think there's definitely something interesting. A lot of games do use that kind of like build your roster on the spot style list design. And I think there's good things about that, but I don't like what that does for like the beginning of a game prep, where you're like, oh, I have to bring, you know, 20 warjacks with me because I may want to play a list with this specific 10 combination or whatever. And like building lists on the spots has all kinds of awkwardness to it.
Not to mention the time usage.
Yeah, I think
that's... unless you put that on the clock.
Yeah.
Which again is hard, right?
Yeah, I think I like the idea of just having like cadres as sideboard options. Like you always can take a cadre, like you have your choice, and you're just like, cadres have a set value, you bring them in and you do some cool things. Not saying that's what it is, I think it could be a cool way to do it.
That's a good idea.
Yeah, I don't think PP really has Steamroller like nailed down yet. I think we're still like on the iterations of the core rules and like the army rules. And I think the next thing after that will be figuring out what Steamroller even looks like. And I think Steamroller is like the most important thing for most War Machine players, because I would say 99.9% of games of War Machine are played on Steamroller.
Yeah, and I think that is a big thing, right? I think you live or die by your Steamroller. I mean, Privateer Press is one I kind of created in the beginning. So you feel like it needs to kind of really hit home for it to do well.
Antonio mentions in the chat is that they believe that you choose they think you're going to choose the rack spells after choosing lists and seeing the opponent's choice, which I guess that gives you a little bit of answer to things, like when you can see what
they have. You'll choose command cards after rack. Yeah, 100%. Well, okay, this could change. We don't know. But as it is now, you choose your rack when you build your list, and you choose your command cards at the game. At the table.
See, I thought it was switch, but okay. Hey, so question for you then, right? So obviously you have a ton of models, right? We talked a little before, and you have pretty much every single faction. So one of the big hot topics, right, and put you on the spot a little bit, right, is that models are invalidated, right? Or do you look at the unlimited versus prime? So I guess first off, right, how do you feel about the prime versus unlimited format?
Doesn't matter. I survived Warhammer Fantasy battles turning into Age of Sigmar. I survived, you know, like models are not an investment. You don't, when you're like settling down, planning out your retirement, your accountant isn't like, what's your model investment portfolio look like? Like that's not it's not how it works. Like you buy models and you get value out of engaging with them. That's how it works. And if you're someone like me, you've gotten a million times more value than the models. Like if you look here, I have like bins of models and display cases of models, and I own every model for every faction at maximum FA pretty much. Like I own like 11 Marauders. Like there's
Jesus.
Yeah, nine Mad Dogs. Like it's like there's just I own a million things, and it's like I've gotten the value from them, like over the course of my time playing the game. Like, it doesn't matter if they were to be thrown out tomorrow, lit on fire, whatever. I've paid the money. I've built the model. I've played with it. I have the value from the model. Like, who cares? That it's not an investment. Like, it's anyways. So,
and I agree with you, right? Like, cause like I look at it, right? When I look at the model of the value, I'm looking at it more like, what did I learn? How did I have fun? Who did I meet? Right? Like, this is a great example, right? I never would have met Kevin. I never would have met you if I'd never played this game, right? Never would have met everyone in this community. I have a really great friend that's a great, great story, right? Is that it was 8 years ago today was Gen Con for my bachelor party. And there is a picture that Andrew Bailey and Ross Thompson always post every year where a cop is yelling at me because I jumped the fence. Because drunkenly I thought there was no door there, so clearly I need to jump the fence, right? And that's a memory. Thank God I didn't get arrested, but that's a memory, right, that I never would have had if it wasn't for the models that I bought, got invested into the game, and started playing, right? So there is value that's not monetary that you get from it.
Well, I think the other thing you got to keep in mind is you know, for those who enjoy the hobby side of things too, just you know, if you take a model, you put it together and you paint it and you spend 2 hours on it and you bought the model for $20, that's almost the price of a movie ticket, and that's the same amount of time. That doesn't even add on to the fact of what you're going to get from actually playing the game.
Yeah, I agree. So obviously we're all in agreement here that, you know, if you've engaged with the game with your models, you've probably gotten value from them, at least worth the money you spent.
Yeah.
And I think there is credence to people being a little bit salty that, you know, as someone, I just bought, like, literally, like, a month ago, I bought a bunch of Grimkin. I knew Mark IV was coming, whatever, but I bought, like, an entire Grimkin army, and I was like, man, I haven't even put together my Defiled Irons yet. Like not even built. They're in the box still. And I'm like, if they, like, hit me with the, like, Grimkin isn't making the transition to Mark IV, I'm gonna be pissed. But, like, then they're like, no, it'll have rules in Prime. I'm like, oh, who cares? And yeah. Then they're like, you know, some stuff will be unlimited. That's fine too. Whatever. Like, we've already seen that a lot of major events are going to be running unlimited format events. Like, Warfare Weekend is going to be running unlimited format as its primary competitive thing the first year, at the very least.
Oh, for next year, it's unlimited. Okay, that's interesting. Can you play Mark IV armies in unlimited or no?
Yeah.
Okay, you can. Okay, that's good.
Yeah, everything's backwards compatible. Not backwards.
Not everything's forward compatible. Yeah. Right.
Do you think cons are going to run into a situation where we have too many options? Because, like, you go to a convention, it's like, now we've got Unlimited, now we've got Prime, we've got Thunderdome, we've got, you know, Hardcore, if they're still going to run that. Like, there's going to be so many different types of options.
I hope they come back with Hardcore. That was my favorite. Oh my god, that was my favorite format. Hardcore, fastest caster kill. I lived for that.
So, let me answer your question, then I have a story. I don't think that's a problem. Cons are 3 to 4 day events, more common being 3. It's already hard enough to run a Masters, like a qualifier event and then a Masters. Like, how many games a day are people playing? And I think this is going to be like maybe a little bit abrasive to con organizers, but I think con organizers need to reevaluate their whole apparatus for gaming. No, like, as someone who goes to a con every opportunity I have, there is, like, the first day of the con where I have to play 5 to 6 games in one day makes me never want to go to a con again. Like, I don't get a lunch break. There's no, like, I don't have water. I'm sweating out my eyeballs. Like, it's... I'm like, I spent the whole time rubbing butts with another man, which is, like, fine, whatever, like, maybe I'll grab it a little bit, like, who's to say, but, like, maybe, like, you know why WTC is, like, the best event? Is because it's 3 games in a day, and you have a lunch break in between. Yeah. You show up Friday, you drink, you have fun with everyone. Saturday, you play a game, then you have lunch, then you play 2 games, and then you're done for the day. And then Sunday, you do the same thing. And that's the kind of schedule where people are like, oh, maybe I'll bring the wife and kids to DC and we'll, you know, we finish gaming at 5 p.m. so we can go see things and then grab dinner and have like a family trip, as opposed to I'm started gaming at 9 a.m. I'm not going to be done till 1 a.m. and I won't have eaten the whole day. Like, that's not like a super sustainable, like, this is why people get con credit cons, because, like, there's no human being that can sustain that kind of a schedule without dying a little bit on the inside.
So,
where's WTC at this year?
Belgium in Blankenburg.
That's pretty awesome.
Oh, man, yeah. Belgium. So, but at the flip side of that, is that necessarily the con's fault, or is that the individual over signing up for things and not saying, you know what, I'm just going to do Masters and I'm going to call it done?
Well, most of the time, that's just the qualifier for Masters. So you show up Friday, you show up Thursday. Let's say it's a 3 day con, so Friday, Saturday, Sunday. They always end cons early Sunday because people want to fly home Sunday night, so they don't have to take Monday off work.
Right.
So usually you don't have lots of games Sunday. So, like, usually games are wrapped up by like 1, 2, maybe 3 p.m. Sunday. And then so you fly in Thursday night, stay in a hotel. Friday you play like 5 rounds in a day, and then Saturday you play like 1 or 2, and then you have like the first few rounds of the Invitational Saturday evening. or like maybe you'd like the invitational Sunday, whatever. But like, imagine you have to play so you have a 7-round invitational. You have to spread that amongst 2 days. You're not going to play 7 rounds in one day. I've done that and it made me want to die. So you're not, you don't want people playing 7 rounds in a day, because that's like 15 hours of War Machine. It's not fine. And then, so you have to do 4 or 5 rounds day one, 2 or 3 rounds day two, and then you have to have the invitational. And that's just like one event. That's not over signing up. I think if you were like, we're going to do just like one event, so it's like, you know, 8 rounds, let's say, no invitational. And then if you want to sign up for other stuff when those rounds are done, you have the ability. Like, we'll have like 3 rounds Friday, 3 rounds Saturday, and then the top 8 Sunday or whatever works. And then you're like, once those are done, you know, we'll have unlimited or prime or
right.
hardcore or the team event, whatever. And you give people the option to play in the more like less the not mainline event, but like still fill up their time with games.
Yeah, that's true. And I guess at the, you know, worst case scenario, you always have Iron Arena. So even if there isn't something structured, you can hop over and just grab a game with somebody. And that's honestly probably where some people can get to play people that they don't ever get to play by, like, hey, I'm going to grab Matt. We're going to head over to Iron Arena just so I can play Matt.
Yeah, I definitely, every con I go to, I try to play as many games as I can during that weekend. I'm also like, I have an unhealthy relationship with War Machine, so I
that's good.
You know, I had a lock and load 2019. I had played like 21 games over the course of the weekend.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, and like that was like super fun. I wanted to die, but it was super fun. And you know, there's a lot of people who are like, oh, I'll play like 2 or 3 rounds in the Masters and lose. And then we'll just spend time in Iron Arena testing out ideas and playing fun stuff. And, you know, I brought this other faction with me because I wanted to play whatever. And I think those are probably the healthiest way to approach like gaming at a con, like have like a goal and then like work towards that goal. Once that goal is not possible, just like do a thing that's fun. But I mean, War Machine players are like, we're seeking to win, like competitively, right? Like you're trying to win. So you're like, oh, I didn't win. Okay, I'll try to get the highest placing I can. And then like that just leads to like playing all the games anyways, right?
That's true, yeah. So obviously, right, you're in part of WTC, so you're pretty inundated with the competitive community, right? We were talking earlier that you're part of a, you know, like a Facebook group, right, where there's like 40 to 50 people that specifically are competitive players that play on War Table. What is the, I know it's not everyone's opinion, right? But what is the general feel you've been hearing from people about the transition to Mark IV? I'm assuming, like, with you know probably more of the competitive feeling, like, there's probably rumors and hintings of it at some point. You guys probably didn't know the rules, right? But we knew it was going to come. Seeing the rules, what is the competitive, from your seeing your perspective, kind of feeling on that? And, like, what format do they think is going to come out of it?
So, I think I would probably say most people are, you know, optimistic. Most people are like, yeah, this could be really great, right? Like, there's a lot of the competitive community is, I guess like the better word is like, they feel like they're cynical, right? Like a lot of the War Machine community in general, we've all been through a lot of shit, and competitive players have been playing the game for a long time, generally speaking. Mm-hmm. So, you know, 8 years of going through shit leaves you a little bit jaded and cynical. So 10 years, whatever, some people even longer. So I would say people are overall optimistic. They're like, yeah, this could be really good. There's some concerns about some like very specific portions. Like we've all seen like the people who are concerned about the movement or people who are concerned about like some specific part of the balance. Those things are, whether you're casual or competitive, people see the same things, right? Like,
yeah.
But I will say that overall, I would say that it's like a trending positivity. Like I would say most people are like a 6 out of 10.
Okay, that's good.
Yeah, like they're like, yeah, this could be really good or it could be bad. And I think the healthiest take on it that I see by a lot of people is, if it's good, I'll play it. If it's not, I won't. And I think that's a healthy take. Like, do the things you enjoy, pursue joy in your life. Don't feel like you're married to a game that doesn't bring you joy. Most people do that with their actual marriages. Don't do it to a game. So, you know, all I'm saying is I think overall people, like, even in, like, outside of competitive communities, I think overall people are generally positive. I know I've had probably 20 people message me that are like, hey, I haven't played the game in, you know, 3-4 years. I'm really excited about Mark IV. It convinced me. And I always just tell them, like, it's not my job to convince you. Play the game.
I like it. That's a really good response to them.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, like, of course, like, sometimes, like, you'll give them the, like, I enjoy it. But, like, speaking for myself, I like Mark IV a lot. There's a lot of things I like about it. A lot of potential for really innovative game design. I think the things that had to go away definitely had to go away. I think Counter-Charge going away is smart.
Makes me a little sad.
I am the biggest vocal person that, like, Counter-Charge is the least fun ability in the game. There is nothing good about Counter. Like, any argument for Counter-Charge being good for the game is, like, the same argument for it being good as the argument for it being bad. You're like, oh, it's like it gives you something to pay attention to during your opponent's turn. Yeah, but, like, it's also a thing that, like, you have no control over, and your opponent, it's entirely up to your opponent to feel like a fucking moron when he does it. Sorry. It's
that's fine.
It's just like you shouldn't feel like an idiot when you play a game for fun. Like you're just like, I move a model here. Okay, haha, get wrecked. Like, and like, it also leads to tons of arguments. So, like, those things are good to go. I like model arcs, get rid of them. I've always hated model arcs. Like, I hate painting my arc because, like, I paint this beautiful model, I like make the arc all black so it looks cool, and then I'm like, all right, I have to draw these lines on it, and like, it breaks up the whole thing. Like, that's stupid. Just get rid of them.
I'm so happy for the I'm happy. I'm so excited about that. I'm really happy about getting rid of I'm sorry, my brain's not working. Whenever you move out of combat, free strikes, yeah. I'm excited about free strike. I'm also kind of excited about the movement. I think the movement's kind of interesting, but I know I'm on the opposite end of that. I think a lot of people are worried about it.
Yeah, so I think the movement is really cool, but there is some wacky stuff that happens, right? And I've been told that some fixes are coming. So I guess, you know, there's that.
I mean, we're in a beta. We had to realize that there was going to be changes. This wasn't going to be the final rule. It's the whole reason there's the word beta on the damn packet.
Yeah. And like, luckily, the playtesters that are involved are passionate, you know, people who are very involved in the game and the community, as far as I know. And there's a few of them. So, I mean, there's a lot of them. And they've been I've heard that they've been very vocal, and, you know, I have faith in the fact that there's good playtesters. I guess we'll be, like, Privateer Press, shout out our boy, Marc-Andre LeBlanc, did a podcast with him. He's a podcaster, WTC player, great, great long-term competitive player.
He was definitely playing back in Mark 2, maybe Mark 1 as well. I know his name's been around forever.
It's just an all-around awesome person, too. Like, just gaming aside, just an all-around awesome person.
I wouldn't go that far, you know. Mark and I have, you know, when I started playing this game, Mark was, like, one of my regular opponents at Steamrollers. And he crushed me a lot. But one of my biggest moments of, like, getting better at the game was there was a con that used to be held in Ottawa. And when I showed up to the con with my buddy Justin, one of the, like, a random guy was like, you see that guy over there? He's the guy who's going to win the con. And I was like, what, you're so weird. And then, like, he pointed out, like, Marc-Andre LeBlanc, who I didn't know anything at the time. And I was like, okay. And I got to play Mark, like, in the semifinals, I think. Yeah. And I ended up beating him. And after the game, he came up to me and he's like, thank you so much for the game. That was, like, one of the best games I've ever played. And I was like, after that, someone came up to me like, oh, dude, that's such a good compliment. I was like, oh, it was just a really good game, like, whatever. But it was like, it's one of those moments that was like, okay, like, competitive War Machine isn't just all assholes. Like, there's people who are super cool. And, like, Mark is one of those super cool people.
So I know we're trying to have a question here, but you mentioning that story really kind of, I want to ask you a personal question. The concept of being meta starstruck, like, oh man, it's McWaters or it's Andre LeBlanc, or like, what is that? Why is that? Like, is why do we take these individuals and put them on a pedestal like they're inapproachable, even though they put their pants on the same way we do?
Because they're really good. I'll answer that. They're really great. Even messaging Matt earlier, I was like, well, I'm worried to message him, but I'm going to anyways.
Yeah, so, I mean, there's, you know, we all have different, like, things about us, right? And I think that there's, like, I think the term is expertise, right? Like, there's people who are experts in the subject, and it always feels weird when you're like, oh, this guy knows what he's talking about. And you know, it's all ego and stuff. One of the weirdest experiences I ever have, like, I've been on podcasts, done a bunch of shit. One of the weirdest experiences I've ever had as a War Machine player is when I play against someone and they beat me and they're just like, I never thought I could win. And I'm like, dude, I lose a million games. Like, I've been learning Legion lately and I lost, like, I don't know, 90-something% of my games. Like, I lose games all the time. No one's unbeatable, right? Like, it just, anyone can be got. Like, anyone can leave their caster 0.5 inches too far forward and you can clap them. Like, it's, you know, there's people who are experts at something. And, you know, not to toot my own horn, I have a bajillion games of War Machine played. And I think that's part of the thing is, like, the legend or the myth of, like, the top tier players is that they'll win every game they play or, you know, they'll beat you. But, like, the reality is, like, they won't. People lose games all the time. My first ever big con win, like, obviously Marc-Andre LeBlanc, but, like, then I went to the Sioux that year and I beat, like, David Beauchamp and I beat a bunch of other really good WTC players. And, you know, you can make the argument, whatever, but, like, I always hear the stories of my buddies losing all the time. Like, someone goes to play, like, a favorite matchup and they get clapped and they're like, I didn't even see he could do that and I died. So, I mean, I guess, like, it's just we build people up in our heads, just like celebrities, right? We're like F-tier celebrities.
Yeah, it's I mean, like, I recognize the skill. I 100% get. But when you're like, hey, go talk to Matt real quick. And they're like, oh, I can't do that. I can't talk to Matt. That's Matt. I'm like, what? I can't do that. I'm like, what are you talking about? Go talk to him.
Yeah, I mean, speaking for all of us, we all enjoy when people come up and talk to us. We're humans. We like to have conversation.
That's good. Next time I'm over at a con, I'm definitely going to bug you.
Yeah, I mean, please do. I mean, you know, like, don't be weird.
I'm going to be super weird.
Okay, that's fine. As long as you grab my butt, I'm okay with it.
Just don't do it in the middle of a game. How about that? Just put it, you know, don't go up to a person and be like, hey, I'm going to have a conversation with you while they're in the middle of a game on the clock.
30 seconds left on the clock. Hey, Matt, just really want to talk to you about this. What do you think of this paint job?
Well, so I will say this. Don't, like, one of my personal pet peeves is when people start talking to me about lists in the middle of, like, I'm, like, in a con, like, we're, like, having a good time, like, whatever, and someone's just like, hey, so I got this Vlad 3 list I was hoping you could look at. It's like, no, man. Like, it's not my job. I'm at a con to play games and relax. Like, you can shoot me a message on Facebook and, like, maybe I'll respond, but, like, you can come up and say, like, hey, Matt, you're like, what are your thoughts on this other thing? But don't ask me to do work.
That's a good point. I like that.
That's a pet peeve. That's not, like, you know, anything. Just me. Yeah.
So, question for you then, right? So you're prepping for WTC, right? So does that mean for you, right, focus-wise, are you just playing Mark III games? Have you been playing anything Mark IV? I know we have a couple of local players, right? And one of them I talked to, they are solely focused on Mark III, right? They don't even want to look at Mark IV until after WTC because they just want to make sure that they're not mixing up rules pretty much. Kind of where are you at with that?
Yeah, so I've played a lot of Mark. I mean, I shouldn't say a lot. I played a few games of Mark IV, but I've watched more games of Mark IV than I've played. And I feel like watching is more informative than playing personally. It's, like, much more boring, right? But, like, it's more informative, and I play most, like, I would say 99% of my games are Mark III, and I'll play, like, occasionally, like, a war table game of Mark IV or something, but watching games is usually what I try to do with Mark IV. It's the outside perspective really helps me understand things.
Okay, so I do have this question for you, right? This is actually not Mark IV related. This is more dealing with War Machine in general, right? So we talked a little bit earlier, and you were saying that, like, since you've moved, pretty much all of your games are on War Table. Oh, Jesus. what I want to know, right, if you're playing on Wartable, how is that translating to when you go to a con and have to play with physical models? Are you seeing, do you see a gap at all? Do you feel like it's still a pretty smooth transition? Are your measurements a little messed up?
I can't eyeball distances anymore. That's just like a skill I've lost. I regain it like a few games into the con, obviously, but like my first, like, so it's very noticeable my first game of the con. Okay. My first game, I'm like, oh god, these are physical models and tokens and shit. So that is okay. This is actually a really important, like, big subject. So
I'm unpacking a lot right now.
Yeah, like, I'm just like, oh god. So the number one thing that I've noticed is that it's hard for me to keep track of tokens and focus and fury and all that stuff during a game now. Because on Wartable, you just like add a token to a model and you're just like, this has dragon's blood on it. Bah. But yeah, in person, you have to like drag its upkeep marker around with it. I'm like, this sucks. Everything, like, well, I have to mark my Blightbringer's aura. Like, this sucks too. And like, also the stakes in person are like higher. You know, it's a game we play, but like, you're trying to win. I'm playing at a con. So like, it feels even worse when like you don't like move the Storm Rager token with the model and your opponent like goes and does stuff and you're like, oh, by the way, this has Storm Rager, and opponent's like, oh shit. And you're like, bah, yeah, shit. So that feels bad. Eyeballing distances is hard. But I will say that like everything else feels fine, and probably in two or three games in person, I'm back to like as good as I was, probably, like, in terms of like in-person gaming. The other thing I realize is that Wartable games are a lot harder than in-person games.
Really? Why is that?
Wartable gives you perfect information. So your opponent has perfect measurements to where everything on the table is at all times. And in person, that's just like not a thing. So
yeah, I mean, yeah, because you do get to, hey, I'm going to say 12.1 inches out of your charge range. You can clearly see that a lot easier. I put a model, I can see the distance on every single model, what the charge range is going to be.
Yeah,
it also poses a problem.
Yeah, also the other big part of it is like you're measuring that 12.1, but you also get to see the 16.1 for the guy with the gun over there, and the 18 point whatever for this guy, and the 12 point whatever for this guy. And like, you end up like, it's just better information. While in person, getting that information is a lot more clock intensive. So a lot of the people I play against, I'll have like 20 in person, I'll have 20 or 30 minute clock advantages, because I just like don't measure shit generally. I'm just like, I measure the important stuff, and anything that's not important, I'm like, it's, if you're, my opponent gets it, like, that's fine. But like, the clock cost of like constantly checking every single measurement is just like not worth it most games. Like, you're like, oh, I lost an additional warrior model in the unit because I didn't measure him. Well, the 7 or 8 seconds of measuring that is like more important to me, gives me the ability to play a turn 7 when I wouldn't be able to before, right?
And you're saying that for in person or Wartable or both?
In person. Wartable, you have like infinite time on your clock. I've only seen people clock on Wartable like once or twice out of hundreds of games.
Okay.
Yeah, because like Wartable is like 75 minutes off the like off deployment off the clock, and that's like just forever. Like, when I go from Wartable to like in person, I'm like, I like look at my clock and I'm like, oh god, I have 15 minutes left, and then I like look at my opponent's clock and they have like 6 seconds, and I'm just like, oh yeah, this guy plays on Wartable too. Like, we're both like super slow.
Okay. Yeah. So one comment made, Bivy A4 said that I found not playing for 2 years, moving around in the app was fumbly. Yeah, I feel like whenever I first started playing on Wartable as well, it was a little fumbly. I really want to get back into playing more, especially like with all the Mark IV stuff coming out. I'm a little worried with choosing the head and arms, right? How it's going to look on the token itself. It feels like it's going to cover a lot, but I'm not sure. I could just be wrong on that.
Yeah, I have faith in Lars and John Henry's been helping him out a bunch. I'm sure there's other people that are helping, so I have faith that it'll be sick with it.
Yeah, I'm really happy that they're gonna keep doing it, right? Like, I was a little worried because I know Line of Sight was really pivotal with a lot of stuff initially, so the fact that he's still gonna continue that on makes me very, very happy that's gonna happen. Because I have two small kids, and then we are in the process of potentially getting a third. So it's going to be really hard to be able to get out as often as I want. So the ability to potentially like sit and play for an hour or two on War Table, it just makes me so happy that that's going to continue on.
Yeah.
Oh, really... sorry. He meant the War Table app, by the way. My fault. War Room app. That's what Bewey. Yeah, my fault, Bewey.
Yeah, playing in person on War Room sucks. Do not like. Every first game I play on War Room, I'm like, oh god, I have to like figure out how to track damage. Literally every opponent I play round one, I'm sorry. Every round they're like, all right, I shoot your thing, and I'm like, okay, yeah, you deal 5 damage to it. War Room. Okay, hold on. Like, let me. What was the column to?
I thought I need to bring like an iPad just so I can go and track stuff. I tried to track it on my phone once, and I was like, this is a terrible decision. Well, it's gonna kill my battery. It just does not work well.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's fine. It's just like when you on War Table, you don't track anything. Like, it's all tracked on the models themselves. You're like, oh, this took 5 damage. You're like -5 to the 6, easy. And like having to do on War Room is like it feels awkward. So I 100% agree with that. Whoever said that.
Yeah, I mean to the point of you know, with War Table, there is a bit of a learning curve in the beginning of it, but I mean it's something that can be easily learned and gotten over. So for anybody who's just doesn't have the opportunity to be able to get out and play, War Table is definitely a good substitute to get games in.
Hey, so Matt, we did have another question. I think I sent it to you earlier. Phil on our Facebook group asked, I'm curious what you think what will make it into Mark IV Scorn, outside of the obvious beast handlers and some form of Titans. And then what is the key to the faction playstyle that needs to remain?
Well, I mean, I don't think there's a faction playstyle anymore, right? We have armies now. And I think what we'll likely see... I mean, like, everything's obviously making the transition, whether it's Unlimited or Prime. But I think the most important stuff for Scorn, and I guess, like, what will be in Prime, if I had to guess, will be Exalted and...
Fist?
Probably Masters of War.
Oh, okay.
That would be my guess. I think they're, like, the two most iconic Scorn things, and they're also kind of set up for Mark IV already in the way that they function. Like, Masters of War is like medium-based dudes, which will be 3-man units, and they already come in units of 6, so one box is 2 units. And the 10-man units will just be 2 5-mans, so that's like pretty easy. Exalted's kind of like iconic of Scorn. It's always been iconic. I can't imagine it not making the transition to Prime.
Yeah.
So that would be my guess. As far as War Beasts and stuff go, and Beast Handlers and stuff, I would imagine that we'll have a Beast Handler, a Pain Giver cadre.
That's what I was wondering, if that would be the cadre.
Yeah, so I would assume. I would assume that we're going to have like a cadre that lets you bring in the support models or like the more iconic models. Or maybe it'll be the reverse. Maybe the cadres will be like Hakkar and some Exalted, or, you know, or maybe some Masters of War stuff. I don't really know, but I think those would be my two guesses, and I think we'll have all the Titans because they're all made out of one kit, pretty much.
Sure, yeah.
Except for the bronze back, right?
Yeah. Well, I know Pokey will be upset if they don't have Rhinodons. That's all I know.
Hey, he does have like 10 Rhinodons at this point. They're all the metal ones. Is there only metal ones?
Yeah, I'm probably sure they've been recasted in resin at some point.
I would hope so.
I mean, you can always. I mean, even if they don't get brought over, you can always put them in a sock and get a new army with them.
Exactly.
So, what army are you looking forward to most? Do you have an idea what you might want to play in? Is any of the new stuff kind of making you excited?
So, I mean, I'm gonna play Dusk. Whatever form that takes, that's what I'm gonna play. Fair. There's no, like, you know, but I have like kind of like a War Machine addiction, so like I'll play everything. Yeah.
I just feel like you're not the first person I've heard about Dusk. So many people keep hearing are excited about Dusk. I feel like people are more excited about Dusk than really anything. Like, I am so hoping that they're ahead on their production and we could see some of that stuff earlier just to get people more excited about it and, like, get them invested, right? Because I know, like, Gaston, that's what he's waiting on. He wants to see what Dusk looks like before he will commit to anything.
And I'm wondering if there isn't some element of that, because Dusk is the first army that is an old army changed. Like, the Kador is still Kador, you know, the Storm Legion is still Signar to some extent. Dusk is, hey, there's been a whole narrative arc, and this is a different thing. It's not Retribution.
Yeah, I just like vampires, so they could have just been like, this is a vampire faction, like, we just took vampire accounts from G-Dub and brought them over. I'd be like, yeah, I'm in, sign me up, $5,000, you got it, here you go, however much it is. Like, I like vampire accounts is what I played in fantasy battles, and with the second, like, if any game hit me with the, like, look at these cool vampire models, I'd be like, yep, I'm in, like, buying them immediately.
That's pretty fair.
Yeah.
Well, and for those who are interested in Dusk, you know, Privateer Press in their last Primecast just recently released that.
Elena?
Yeah.
She's a mini. That's a mini crate model called Living Dead Girl. So don't draw too many conclusions off that.
She still looks cool.
Zombie vampire elf. I'm in.
Yeah, that's true.
No, so, like, I ordered Orgoth. That's, like, so my buddy Justin, my like, he's, like, a regular play opponent, my best friend. He ordered the Kador stuff.
Nice.
He was just like, sign me up, bang! My girlfriend ordered the Signar stuff, so...
Nice.
Yeah, and then I ordered, because it was my last choice, I ordered Orgoth because it's like the
you
only
thing into it.
Yeah, I was like, man, the Signars, so like literally it was like, man, the Signar models are dope, and then like they had the artwork just come out like a couple days ago for dude with the wolf hat, and like he had like all the Winter Corps guys around him.
Yeah,
and I was
he
like,
looks
no,
really
I...
fucking cool.
Yeah, and like the artwork is like sick. And I'm like, oh man, now I want to play Kador. Like this looks sick. And like Orgoth's cool, and like the War Witch lady is her, if you've read her rules, she looks so fun.
Oh, she looks so awesome. She's really cool.
Yeah, I like the Kador stuff and I like the Signar stuff, but Orgoth actually looks fun to play. So I was like, yeah, like having like ricocheting daggers and like dude with Kalandra's like fate blessed rule, like this is everything I love about War Machine. So I was like, oh, you know, like my third choice was like still like acceptable, right? Like I was still excited for it.
So I'm going to ask your hot take on this, right? So last episode, Gaston's thought on Orgoth was that you could just drop them in any faction and it wouldn't matter because they didn't have a true feeling faction identity. Well, what do you feel about that?
I mean, it doesn't matter to me. Like, I'm like, hey, whatever. Like, it's all just rules anyways. Like, they don't need... Why do their rules have to be indicative of, like, well, he comes from the sea, so he has the rule salty, meaning that he, it doesn't matter. Like, does Shave particularly feel like a pirate right now? Like, oh, he has Kudamain. Like, great. He has, like, it's not, like, a particularly, like, pirate thing. Like, oh, he has groundwork or whatever. Like, why is that a pirate? Or like, he doesn't particularly feel like a pirate either. Like, they're all just rules. Like, they don't have to have pirate names to feel like pirates. And like, that's like the first thing. Second thing, Orgoth aren't like sea raiders, right? These warcasters are like hundreds of years old. They're right. They're like the patriarchs of like their lineage that like get reincarnated into their kids for like generation after generation after generation. Like,
I forgot about that. You're right. Yeah.
Like, you would think that like grandpa who's like 900 years old isn't like, I'm a pirate and I define myself by the fact that I have the spell White Squall. Like, he's 900 years old. Like, why is White Squall his identity? I guess that's my take on it.
Huh. I like it. That's good.
Yeah, I don't know, Matt. Like every time I look at Orgoth, I can't help but feel like they're like if Scorn and Krix got together and had a one night stand and had a really ugly looking baby.
Hell yeah, I'm into it. That's exactly what they look like. You got like your blighted trollkin looking dudes, the Orcoth or whatever they're called, and you got the like Satixis looking dudes, and but they do share a lot of the same common origins, right? Like Krix's whole aesthetic is derived from Orgoth. Like the war witches are like a
That's
direct
true, yeah.
a direct take from the Orgoth War Witches. And a lot of like Crixian technology, like pretty much everything Crix uses, is a direct ripoff of something Orgoth did.
Yeah, no, that's fair.
So like, you know, who's copying who is all I'm saying.
Yeah. So hey. A couple things from the chat. One, Buey, I agree. Storm Legion for life. Athena, I cannot wait for her to come out. When I saw her rules, I instantly fell in love. I liked her artwork, but I am so excited for Storm Legion. And yeah, Antonio, or Loth, I should say, if you're ever on Discord, right? Seahorse Cavalry is pretty cool for Orgoth.
Yeah. Want to take a moment to recognize, thanks, Dayel, for subscribing to the channel.
Thank you. We're trying to get we're working back, getting our stuff back up.
Yeah, I mean, like, overall, I would say, personally, I'm very excited for Mark IV. I will say that the overall tone of the groups I'm in is positive. There was, like, you know, the initial announcement was... So, can I just talk for, like, give me, like, 2 minutes to talk about one of the big problems with the War Machine community?
You can talk for the next 6 to 8 minutes if you want. We've got 10 minutes left, and I got to think of a question.
All right. So one of the big problems with the War Machine community is everyone reacts emotionally immediately. We're all so invested in the game that we're very emotional. And when something's like new, different, whatever, it triggers an emotional response, and people get very like, bah! And... if everyone just like, instead of immediately making 1,000 threads on Facebook, just went outside and like took a breath and like looked at the sun, not directly at it, of course, but like was just outside for like, give yourself like 10 minutes outside, and then came in and made your post, I think you'd find that like the overall tone would be very different. Because like the first day of the Mark IV announcement, the first like 2 or 3 days, people were losing their minds. They were just like, oh my God, the sky is falling. And now like the same people 4 days later, a week later, whatever, are just like, oh, I'm pretty excited about this thing over here. And it's like, dude, you were 4 days ago, you were like, I'm throwing my armies in the trash. Like,
it was gonna be like those people that were like burning their like Nikes or whatever.
Yeah. Like I remember my buddy threw out all his Warhammer Fantasy models when they killed that game off. And holy, I was shit. I was like, dude, you had like a, you know, a 20,000 point collection of Skaven. And he's like, yeah, dude, fuck this, and throwing it all in the garbage. And now we're like years later, and he's like, man, I really wish I hadn't done that. Like, he's like, man, I could still like, I could be selling them for money. I could be doing all the stuff with them. And I'm just like, yeah, it was pretty stupid.
That's not great.
Yeah, so it's a bad luck.
Rule number one, when you think you want to get rid of your army, put it in a box, put that box somewhere, and just wait. Take a breath. Yeah. Just like you were saying, take a breath. Go touch some grass.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think there's like, you know, there's in our community, there's a lot of like very emotional responses, like because people are very invested. And they kind of feed off each other, right? Like just like how social media works. But I will say that day one was just like people not being able to read the document, and then people taking the misinformation and then repeating it like it was the correct information was like the most infuriating thing for me. I think I was just sitting there like, I'm never going to interact with the War Machine community again, ever again. This is awful.
Terrible. But yeah, very true.
Yeah. I was like, this is rough. And you know, like, you know, I'm not some paragon of virtue. I'm obviously just like another idiot. But like I just don't post on Facebook unless I'm like certain of what I'm saying. So like, you know, maybe don't make a new thread when you haven't read the rule book is all I'm saying.
Yeah.
There's your PSA.
That's true. Yeah.
Don't post.
Don't make a post unless you've read. So I got one more question, right? We got a couple minutes left. There's something kind of where I'm getting stuck on, right? And I don't think they will answer this in the Steamroller document. I think it's got to be on a community-based thing, right? But one thing I love and I hate is saying, hey, you can play this game at 50, 75, or 100. I just want a fucking number, right? Like, I really just want, like, just give me a number so I can work to build to. What are your thoughts on that? Like, what do you feel about the variety of numbers? Like, do you think in a tournament obviously, there's got to be a set number that we're going to go to, right? In a convention, it's got to be, hey, we're going to play 50, we're going to play 75, we're going to play 100, right? Or 100 with three colossals. Whatever floats your boat, right? What are your thoughts on that?
So I think 100, it will be the standard competitive size. Almost right. Everyone I've talked to about it thinks 100 is what it is. Just because, like, to get a similar amount of models on the table as previous 75, you still end up with less, but, like, it's, like, a good amount is 100 points.
Okay.
At 75 points, you end up with, like, half to a third as many models as you have now, which really? Is... Yeah, right? Because, like, your warjacks, remember, 75 points now is 100 points, 103 or whatever, plus rec choices.
Yeah,
so,
you're right.
So you're like 120-ish right now, which 75 in Mark IV is like equivalent to 50 now. No, it's actually even less than that. So I think 50 will be the introduction value for the game. And I think 100. Yeah, and I think 100 will be the standard gameplay experience, if I had to guess. But there's a bunch of different ways they could go with the points cost, right? Like they could be like competitive format is 75 plus this or 100 plus that. And like there's a million different ways that can go with it. And I think we need to actually see what they want to do with the actual rules of the game. And we need to see what they want to actually do with the Steamroller document before I'm staking my claim in any.
And that's just what I want to know. Like, I love the fact that, like, hey, look, this game is truly balanced around all of these different point costs. Like, this is really fun. But I'm like, I get it. I'm here for it. But I just want to know point costs. I just want to know a community standard. And that's something, like, as a community, right, we won't be able to know until we see more models come out, we see more rules, all that stuff, see what the Steamroller. Because Steamroller, right, even back, you know, in Mark 1, Mark 2, Mark 3, didn't have a, hey, this is the point level, right? We played. Like, I remember in Mark 1, you'd play like a Gen Con. Day one, it was 500 points. Then day two, it was 750. And then day three, it was 1,000 points. And that was a bear in Mark 1. God. Could not see that. They could put say, hey, whatever, they could do it again, right? But yeah, I just want to see. I just want to know. I just want to know.
But
I think. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say, you just said something, though, that I think is really key to point out is that you said, what is the community standard? Does that not imply that it's upon us, the community, to decide it and not Privateer Press?
I feel like in Mark 2 and in Mark 3, right, they said, hey, this is where the standard games are, right? And we kind of just built around that. I could be wrong, right? But I remember they saying, like, hey, like, this is kind of where we're looking at for community base. No? Matt's shaking his head no. Maybe I'm just misremembering.
Masters in Mark II was 75 points specialists, and then after you did got to the top eight or whatever, it was 100. You had like 100 points or whatever. You like you brought in like your sideboard models. You could like change your lists. You built a new list out of the models from the list you had played previously or something. I think I only played this format once, but like that was like the standard experience. I'm sure I'm misremembering like some parts of it, but that was like I remember having to rebuild my list for the top eight and being like, you could only include models from the list you've played up until this point. So if you had only played one list, you would still only be playing that one list, basically.
That's whenever they used to do the rotation of the warcasters, right? That was like, hey, yeah. You're four warcasters. I remember that was goofy.
So
that was goofy, and that died pretty quickly.
ADR.
That's it.
Yeah. So I think to your point, I suspect that 100 points will be standard. It's also like a good like random number. Like 100 sounds better than 75 for some reason to me. Yeah. So I think that'll be standard. And I think, you know, so I mean, I guess at the end of the day, who really knows? It's going to be up to the tournament organizers. I think I don't think Privateer Press is responsible for telling us, like, hey, play your games at this points level, you miscreants. Like, it's going to be up to us to determine what size or like our conventions will be run at, because like I could see an argument for 75 if people are playing, like, you know, we have to play 11 rounds or something, then like 75 point games in, you know, each player has 45 minutes seems reasonable, but like 100 points on a 60 minute death clock per player is fine too. Like, it just comes down to what we as a community probably want to engage with. And I think that's the same thing for Prime and Unlimited, is what we as a community engage with.
Yeah, and that's true. So we've got a minute left, or I guess less than a minute. So I guess we'll be wrapping up, but we'll save our guests for last, right? So Kevin, do you got anything else you want to kind of wrap up on before we close out?
No, I guess I would like to toss a question out to the audience. You know, comment down below, what do you think is going to be that point level? What do you think is going to be the level that your community, be it your local community or conventions or just playing in your basement with your friends, what point level are you going to be playing at when Mark IV gets released?
Awesome. Matt, what do you got for everyone to wrap this thing up?
Be good to your neighbor. I guess if I had like one thing, is just like, treat other people the way you want to be treated. Engage with the community you want people to engage with you. Like, don't be an asshole. That's it.
Matt, I really truly appreciate you coming on. I'm really hoping we get you on more. And maybe even in the future, do a like a war table game stream whenever Mark IV comes out in full force, hopefully. I'd be super excited. I know Kevin is going to be really excited to try to edit that or whatever we'll do. But everyone, thank you for tuning in. Please answer Kevin's question below. All right, where do you think we're going to be at for points-wise? With that being said, thank you, everyone, very much. Have a good night.